Meeting to order for the Monday, May 13th, 2019, Othello City Council meeting. Would you all please rise for a short private invocation, asking for God's blessing and for wisdom upon the city and upon the councils we make our decisions tonight. Now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Item 1.4 is roll call. I'll make note for the record that all council members are present. And item 1.5 is the citizen input. Is there any citizens tonight who would like to address the city council? Please raise your hand and I'll recognize you. Okay. Hearing none, I'll move to the approval of our agenda tonight.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll move to the item 3, which is our consent agenda. Entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent agenda.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried, and so we'll now move to our current business. 4.1 is the Othello Farmers Market Feasibility Study, and we're going to start off with the Park and Recs Coordinator, Amy Hurlbut. Amy, will you take it away?
Good evening. Tonight I have with us Tom Beckwith. He is one of our consultants on this project. He is who we hired with a grant that we got from Director Sanderson. And we've been working along with him and Eric Hovey. And then Meg Ventrell is here. She is from Gordon Honeywell Thomas. She's our longtime consultant and project manager, so she's also on this project. I provided a copy of this presentation in front of you tonight so you can follow along. Additionally, behind that, there's a secondary presentation. That is the complete study that's been provided by Mr. Beckwith and Mr. Hovey. There is some sort of a synopsis type information at the beginning and some appendices with all of the details and information, the questions that we asked on the survey, and a little bigger more specific dive into what we did to yield the results that we have there. The presentation that I'm going to give you tonight is just going to be a quick PowerPoint to take you a little ways down the road that where we've been and try to give you an idea of where we're going to go with our next steps, and look for your guys's opinions and guidance, and see where you'd like to move forward on this after the presentation. So we'll go ahead and get started. The purpose of this study was to figure out, should we, could we, if we build it, how big, when. Those were some of the questions that we started out with, and the best way to decide all of those answers was to gather data and make an educated and informed hypothesis of what we think the future of Othello's Farmers Market might look like. Right now, most of you know the Chamber of Commerce is managing the Farmers Market and has been for 5 seasons. Prior to that, the Senior Center in Othello was in charge of the market administration. As I mentioned at the beginning, this was a project that was funded through grant, so we were really pleased to have the opportunity to hire consultants and work with people who specialize in these kinds of projects, and staff was able to get involved and help get some of the components together as well. And I've already introduced your consulting team. So the feasibility study components was a community and vendor survey. We did the vendor survey and the community survey in person and through electronic. During the farmers market last year, there was a walk around survey that we would try to administer to patrons, and we encouraged all of the vendors to participate in the vendor survey. Then there was a secondary survey in both of those categories sent out through SurveyMonkey, and we outreach to the community here in Othello as the customer base, and then our vendor range was semi-regional, north, south, east, and west, and assessed as a wide cast of semi-regional farmers and other potential vendors. We also talked about where we could possibly put it and what it would look like, And the operational plans, costs and revenues, of course, is what this study was yield. Originally, there were six sites that were considered. These six sites were identified by an original group of people. It was about 30 people that got together, and we invited market administration, vendors, stakeholders, special interest groups, and customers, along with our steering committee of Stephen McFadden from ACDC, Meg, of course, the other two consultants that we had, Sean, myself, were the sort of masterminds, I guess, behind some of this as it dwindled down into a smaller group. We identified CBHA's existing Main Street Clinic as a potential site, possibly just leaving it at Pioneer Park and expanding what the market could offer there at the park. Next was City Hall's parking lot. We talked about there being an identifiable, easy to see, city-owned property. Everybody knows where City Hall is, so we thought parking, space, all seemed like potentially a good idea. Main Street location was very important to all of the vendors and the current market administration. So as you notice, most of these sites are located down Main Street. Number five is the Irrigation District, which is the Bureau of Reclamation property that's on the corner of 7th and Main. The fourth site is at Lions Park on the north side. So as I originally identified, the parking lot that's up next to the skate park offers an ample amount of parking. It has restrooms within a reasonable distance, some shade and tree coverings and existing amenities the park has. And the sixth site was the empty lot next to the kickstand that's on the corner of 14th and Main. Using some specific site evaluation criteria, we dwindled down what we had, 6 to 3. In the process of that, Avista's location became part of the discussion as they announced their plans to move out of town, which would leave the facility that's currently the southern border of the existing farmers market available for purchase, seeming like an attractive thing to take a look at. We also took into consideration the specific location as Main Street being very important, increased parking, how many vendors there could be, did they all have to be seasonal, was there an indoor component? I think that in a lot of group conversations, we talked about the need to have something on the off season that could still generate revenue. So we talked about indoor spaces being important so that we could have classrooms, that we could offer either parks and rec programs or meeting spaces. We could have a commercial kitchen that could be used year round for people to process their own products in a food safe environment and quite possibly create vendors that didn't exist before because now they have the means in which to create a product that could sell at our farmers market. We also talked about the current market administration being the Chamber of Commerce, and if we did have that indoor component, there's the potential of them being able to relocate to a more Main Street location as well and operate the Chamber of Commerce office out of the market administration office as well. Move on to the three options. Option number one, as I mentioned, was at Lions Park. That was a key factor to take into consideration because of the low cost. As I mentioned before, Lions Park has a lot of existing amenities already, so I guess the kind of idea of moving the mountain to Muhammad or vice versa, if you take something that you need to be well attended and populated to a place that is already well attended and populated, then they become symbiotic to one another. They're going to help each other out. So when it was identified, Lions Park's opportunities, the parking lot off of Hamlet was thought to be the best location at that time. It increased our vendor stalls by triple what we have right now. Plenty of on-street parking, the opportunity for vendors with produce to be able to back into stalls so they're not having to carry their products through the park or over to their tent site. There was new trees, there's new play structures, the swimming pool's there, the basketball courts are there, and all of the existing amenities as well. Most of our larger scale events happen at Lions Park also, so there is also the potential to be able to share customer base between baseball and softball tournaments or the 4th of July and have the market be able to benefit from those things. Option number two was the Avista location. Like I mentioned, is it on the southern border of Pioneer Park, which is the current home of the farmers market. As you can see here, this drawing has conceptualized the idea of the two properties kind of becoming one. So that tan, oh, I have a pointer here, don't I? Is this, or is it anonymous? I don't really need it. The tan strip in the middle is the alley between where Avista currently is and the park currently is. So the idea would be to sort of create a more conjoined space, move the current recycling center to a different location and be able to maximize the space of that full city block. The inside of the Avista building would be able to provide that indoor component for learning spaces or commercial kitchens, office spaces, and all the other things that we mentioned before. There's a few roll bays that could be long-term tenant situations there where they were there year-round, and then we could introduce a seasonal market component. So the flexibility seems advantageous here. It's not exceptionally large, so the growth potential is limited, but as compared to what we currently have right now, I think offers plenty of potential, at least for the near future. The third option is the BOR compound, which is where the irrigation district is currently located. Phase one, which is outlined in red on the bottom of that map, is the Water Master building and the grass piece of property that's right on the corner. This would be the phase one approach to create ADA accessible building and incorporate the outdoor seasonal market pieces in the grass and potentially offer a little bit of opportunity for some of those vendors who might be more long-term to use some of the roll bay shops that are near or around this parking lot. There's plenty of parking here, and in a phased approach, again, seems more realistic than taking on the full project all at once. The second or full phase that we've approached for now is also includes this northern piece that has all of the outbuildings. So if you've driven by there, I don't know if you've ever paid attention to just how many actual buildings are in there, but there are several, and each one of them right now has a completely different and unique purpose. One is for welding, one is for woodworking, one is for machine shopping. They all sort of have their own quirks and aesthetic challenges, but I think in an environment like a farmer's market, that is a favorable environment to find yourself in. The location for full expansion, I mean, there is a limit, of course, but really it sort of feels like the options are endless when it comes to what could go there. We've talked about all of the potential possibilities from WSU having a food research center there, to moving the food bank and having a community garden within the complex that is next door to the farmer's market, so they all sort of work together. We've talked about having maker spaces and being able to help business and entrepreneurship out of some of the spaces that are currently existing there. So this obviously offers a much more broad spectrum of possibilities. Most of that has to do with its size and capacity, but also some of the features that it already has now. I'm going to have Tom come up for these next two slides. These are going to be pieces of information that were generated from the study. Oh, and he has his own pointer.
All right, thanks, Amy. I'm going to give you some of these findings that we've taken from other farmers markets, but in the report itself, we profiled seven markets within your area. That includes Moses Lake, Ellensburg, Pasco, Olympia, Vancouver and Wenatchee, and a multi-purpose kind of market and food related incubator called Dayton Blue Mountain Station Food Park. But these are the major findings. First, that the most effective operations are multifaceted. They're really multi-purpose community gathering spaces. And they do have farmers markets, but they also attract a lot more activities, or can if they're part of a multifaceted operation. And this is a concept we found that the vendors and the residents and the people that were at some of the open houses favored. Really, you shouldn't, the most effective farmers markets, particularly if you look at read the descriptions in chapter four, are part of some bigger operation. If it's in Wenatchee, it's Pybus Market, relates to that. If it's Pasco, it's the commercial kitchens of the downtown. If it's in Ellensburg, it's also the downtown relationship. So you shouldn't look at farmers market as an independent standalone. It's really one component of a much bigger economic enterprise. The second thing is have a good market mixture. One of the biggest draws, of course, is our produce and vegetables and farm products, whether that's honey or leather or all types of processed goods. They also can have crafts, they can have social health services, you have entertainment, they can have food that you can eat at the market and so on. But the key driving force is the ability to come and buy fresh produce, fresh farm products. The markets have problems when that gets to be too low of a percent of the number of vendors. So the best markets do maintain a percent that they have to have that are farm related and farm products. The third is we did look at three alternative sites, and Amy profiled those. They are all viable, but they all have different opportunities and different, let's say, qualifications to them. Year-round indoor markets are probably the most effective part of the farmers markets. It gives you activity that's year-round, but it also gives you an activity that can generate those other related enterprises. If it's just a seasonal, and that's not to say seasonal isn't a good idea, but the seasonal has difficulty generating permanent neighbors and permanent activities. And I might back up and say that one of the issues that makes a market effective or not is if it's a continued programming of community events, from dog walks to bands to 4-H exhibitions to cheerleading contests to whatever it is, people come out to the market to be entertained as much as what's to buy. So it becomes a place, placemaking. So the fact that it's a community gathering place is maybe even more critical than the fact that it also sells farm produce. Business startups are generated by farmers markets. In a lot of respects, it used to be that the farmers would bring in their goods, and this would be one other outlet for them, as well as all the other traditional places which they sell their foods. But increasingly, we're seeing urban farmers, organic farmers in Seattle. The farmers market is full of Hung and other ethnic groups who farm in very small plots in the Green River Valley, but they offer something that's not available elsewhere. So it's really a startup business opportunity. And the fact that it's based primarily around farmers' goods doesn't mean that it's limited to that. We start seeing crafts show up, different food menus and different food eating opportunities, entertainment and so on. So really what you're doing is you're incubating business opportunities. And last, the economic and other impacts from this come to the fact that it includes direct sales and employment. We found that your average vendor employs between 3 and 5 people at their vendor stands just for the outdoor seasonal market. It's improved nutrition because you're getting fresh foods, and increasingly they're organic. They're not processed, they're not shipped, they're not stored. The costs are lower. You have access to social and health services, and you have a sense of community. So those are the indirect benefits as well as just the basic sales and jobs. I advanced by the top one. This one? Oh, it did it. So some of our implementation recommendations. If you look at the descriptions we gave you, the 7 markets, you see that they're all organized, owned, and operated differently. But the most effective one is a joint venture where the property and the market and the lands and the landlord functions are undertaken by the cities. In some cases, it's been a nonprofit, but the most effective is the city owns it just like you would a park or another public facility. Then there's another entity that operates it and programs it and promotes it and markets it. And a lot of these examples, they were chambers of commerce, but they can also be another nonprofit. It's very difficult, though, to ask a chamber or a nonprofit to basically own the real estate, do the development, carry the major financial issues in the beginning. So the cities worked most effectively when the cities were the landlords and there were other players who actually did the programming. But that's very flexible. There's a lot of different variations on that. And we wouldn't say that this is the only way of doing it, but it's certainly one way you would want to look at as you move forward. The second is, how do you recruit more vendors? We think you should focus on your area first, Othello, and in the Adams County area. And what you may find is we do most of these things, most of those long-term vendors are here. They either have not organized to be at the market, or they've not gotten into the business of doing it, or they have a business now, and this is another outlet. So your most aggressive recruitment should start locally, and then as you develop a good base from that, then expand into the greater region surrounding you. But you shouldn't presume that you should go out into the region and get vendors and bring them here to start with. It's got to be a local enterprise and a most effective if that's the way you focus it first. Your site development concepts between the three, If you're looking long-term, you need to look at indoor, and you need to look at its ability to create a larger, bigger focus for your incubation opportunities. So long-term, the VOR may be your best site, but that's a long-range solution. Your issues are, what do you do on the interim basis, and what do you do if or when that property becomes available to where you can utilize it? And then if you do get it, that's going to be a long-term prospect too. But you may find that if the VOR property is available, you're going to have other partners who can play at that site that can't play at the other two. So that's something for you to consider. For investment, we think it will take 2 to 3 years of any of the alternative sites in which they get to the point where you have positive cash flow. And the issue is, how do you finance that negative cash flow till you get that? And part of your costs are startup costs of recruiting vendors and having a vacancy rate or a low utilization at first, and then progressing to the point where you have full utilization, to where you have a good number of vendors that are there every market day and or paying membership fees, and or generated enough sales to which they can sustain themselves. We think your break even on the more aggressive sites may be 4 to 5 years to where you get to the point where you have enough revenue that you can then borrow against that. That doesn't mean that we don't think that you don't have grants or financial assistance available to you. And some of those examples are listed in Appendix F, but a lot of them are described in Chapter 5, where we itemize the development costs and how that would be shared. We itemize what we think your income and your operating expenses would be, and what the assumptions are for some of those between the five variables, and then what we think your basic cumulative positive and negative cash should be over those time frames. So it's very detailed, but we think it's very realistic. On the right. So your next steps to implement that targeted vendor outreach, now that you have a program and a business plan and some comparables, and when we set some of the financial operating costs and some of the fees and so on, we set them at the lowest possible range. They're almost what you have now in some cases. And then they progressively amp up as you work into through the first 5 years to where we think you're competitive. You need to focus on growers, small food processors, food retailers, artists and craftspeople. And as I said, you may find that the bulk of them are here, but they've not been organized or thought about this being as an opportunity for them. And you've not particularly may have promoted and marketed that way. But it is here. There's not much doubt about that. And then continue to rely upon the technical expertise and assistance that's available at State Department of Agriculture, at the State Farmers Market Association, at WSU's Experimental Station. There's a number of different nonprofit as well as state and federal agencies that can not only provide you expertise, but to potentially provide you some assistance in financing some of this startup. And with that, if there are any questions of me or Amy?
Council?
I've got one more slide here for you guys. And just real quick on the next steps here. So Colleen Donovan is the Washington State Farmers Market Association director. She's participated in several farmers market analysis studies, not just for local governments or other small communities, but statewide, and has a ton of information. You know, one of those kinds of people that's kind of gone through the trenches already and can tell you where not to turn left and where to turn right and help avoid some of the, you know, pitfalls that a lot of people experience. This is obviously busy farmers market season, so I briefly touched base with her at the beginning, got a lot of her resources, and I've been working with her here and there, but we'll have a chance to reconnect a lot better once farmers market season is over. One of her big recommendations was go visit all of the farmers markets around you and see what they're doing. And with permission from their market administration, go in and say, I'm gonna find five vendors at today's market and ask them, what was attractive about this market? Why did you choose this size space? Why do you choose this menu mix? How many other markets do you attend? So that we can sort of build a base of contacts moving forward as we develop our own farmers market. Derek Sanderson, as mentioned, was the one that originally funded this. He's been a continued resource. We did check in with him midpoint through this study and gave him an up-to-date presentation. And from there, met a ton of different people based off of his recommendation and just the doors that continued to open from there on has been very encouraging. And then Kurt Pearson, who we've just recently began working with USDA Rural Development. They actually came here to Othello and visited us and gave us a little bit of information about what federal funding opportunities there are for programs like this. So there is money at the federal level for the building and acquisition, for the development costs. And there's even funding that gives 100% grant with no match to fill the vendor spaces with things like commercial kitchen hardware and all of the internal pieces that you need. Those are all of the in the weeds navigation to get through. That's what we're here for. We'll get you all the good stuff and bring it to you and let you make the decision of where we decide to go from there. We've also been in conversations specifically with Avista and BOR since about that midpoint presentation. So I've presented to the East Columbia Irrigation District Board of Directors. I've been to Yakima and visited with the Bureau of Reclamation's Director, Assistant Director, and Real Estate Supervisor. I've just put together Avista's one-pager. So each one of those two entities has its own document that specifically talks about what the market looks like in their environment, how long we see the process going down the road, what we need from them, and kind of the back and forth that way. Those documents continue to evolve as our next steps change as we complete the steps that we're working on right now. So I guess in a nutshell, the version that we have with Avista is Avista has a property that isn't going to be terribly easy to sell. It isn't like it's a piece of green grass that somebody can do anything with. It is a pretty established and existing facility that somebody with a special need or desire is going to want to purchase. They know that, and we know that. They want to get rid of it so they can move into their new site. And the Avista Foundation is a grant foundation that is parented by Avista, is very excited to give us some portion of funding, and that is our next meeting is exactly what they're willing to give us by way of grant or reduced price on the purchase and acquisition of that building. And they really want to give money to Othello for some reason. So I'm just gonna ride that train out as long as it goes and see where it comes. So my next visit with Paul Kimmel and Christy and Ian Eccles is to sit down, and they're gonna bring a one pager to me based off of what I've asked them, which is, how much do you want to sell it for and how much are you going to give it to me for? And then we can kind of go for there from there. BOR, we have a much longer road to haul when it comes to the BOR property. They're not moving out as we speak. They want to move out. The process for federal land acquisition is long and arduous, but we think we've identified the best route to go when we do get to that point. I think one of the biggest challenges with the BOR site is it's, although we've presented it to you in a phased approach, there really isn't a phased approach when it comes to the acquisition of the property. The irrigation district doesn't want to exist part in Othello and part at their new facility. So it's a complete transition of property over to us, regardless of how phased we would like to see the approach. But it does make the development cost for us more attainable if we do take a couple stabs at it that way. I think that the time frame of 3 to 5 years is something realistic when we talk about Avista to actually having it and moving in and being able to use it. They've said that that timeline could be expedited a little bit depending on how our conversation goes the next time we meet. Irrigation district is probably 7 to 10 years in reality. So that again is another reason to maybe look for the irrigation district to be that like larger long-term aspirational dream. And I think that that time frame is very fitting to be able to grow and improve the existing market at a moderate size facility and transfer it to a larger site at another point in time. That may or may not happen. Maybe the farmers market is at Avista and is just a booming enterprise right there. But I've also told the BOR and Irrigation District that even if the farmers market falls short, that I don't want to stop the conversations as to what that property could potentially be for something in Othello, whether it did turn into an incubator or business kind of market, or it was turned into something different than it is that we haven't even thought of yet. So they are interested in continuing that conversation as well, but it is a multiplayer situation and the federal government being involved always complicates that process. So the community response that we've had, I will tell you, and I mean this in a very positive way, I've been around for a long time from the Chamber of Commerce, school, parents in sports, and I have never been part of a project that has been so openly accepted by nearly everybody that I've talked to. And not only that, but they don't want the moderate, they don't want the small, they want the whole big thing. And I was shocked. The third Thursday dinner was the first time that we had a pretty involved group of people gathered in one place, some of the biggest naysayers or challenging to make happy set kinds of people were there, and they just loved every piece of it. They were excited. They thought the idea of having a place that we could centrally locate farmers market or no farmers market, the community idea of having a place to go, having a, you know, ladies night on Thursday night and kids games on Friday after school, and tons of conversation and great ideas came from that. So it's not just about a farmer's market, I guess, when it all comes down to it. I think Tom, it was exactly right when he says that the market is almost going to be a component of something much bigger. And I think that it's a great way to look at it, that it's an important and key piece to it. And if you look at some other examples like Pybus, I think they learned that, and we can use them as a model. They opened up with the idea that they were going to be this gangbuster farmer's market. Turns out they're actually a really, really great venue for events that happens to have a farmer's market seasonally. So it works well for them, and so I think you have to be very flexible what your plans can be as we continue to develop all of this. But learning from other people's processes is going to be really important. So now we're imagining a much larger farmer's market in the long term that is an anchor tenant or somebody who can provide a constant source of income for something that's much bigger in our community. We would like to see regional and economic development growth. Like I said, with ACDC being involved, it's been interesting to see their perspective on what the market could potentially offer as well. That is all I have in this presentation here. And Tom gave you, you know, the quick version of the big, large packet that's in front of you there. This is the conclusion of the feasibility study, but I feel like there's just a lot hanging that would be difficult to walk away from. It'd be nice to be able to spend some more time wrapping up some details and spending some time in markets throughout the summer and talking to other administrators and figuring out what kind of potential there is as we continue to work with BOR and Avista on this. But that is your guys' decision as to what you'd like to see going forward. So if you have any questions or comments, there's probably enough of us in the room that can do our best.
Well, I think it would be ideal to have you looking at other things over the summer and wrapping up. We don't want to leave things hanging and forgotten. So.
Absolutely. Just brief history. Was a year ago, January. Meg, myself, Gina, and John were meeting with the state director of Ag, and I think he asked, you know, kind of, well, all right, Sean, you know, why are you guys here? And within about 3 minutes of trying to explain to him what we were doing with a farmer's market, and I'm fumbling because Meg threw me a curveball, because I thought she was going to talk, but instead it was me. That's when he asked me if $50,000 would take care of it. And of course, not knowing whether I should ask for more or whether that was too much, I turned to Gina, and we were all kind of looking at each other after our jaws dropped. But since that time, there's been a lot of work. I've seen a lot of different studies and different things go on with city and chamber, but this is probably one of the more comprehensive ones I've seen. And I want to thank Amy and Meg and Tom and the rest of the people who were part of that put this together, because Amy's driven a lot of miles and she has put a lot of time and effort. And in order, I mean, I guess, you know, the thing that I'm sitting here thinking is that you're going to have to dream. You've got to dream, and you got to dream big. And if you want some nice things for this community, this $50,000 took one giant step forward towards that. So now, really, and you heard Amy talk about, well, I mean, first of all, you heard Tom talk about that there is the opportunities, but then you also see how Amy, in her mind, already is looking at the different funding sources, state, federal, and otherwise, and non-profit through Avista, to keep this dream alive. And one of the things that this community really is missing is a central gathering place for there to be events, for there to be entertainment, and get food, and all these other items that they covered in the presentation. And so I guess I don't really want to go on anymore, but I just, I would like to know, is the council pleased with this? Is the council want to see this type of thing come to Othello? And if so, would we have your consensus to continue to pursue it?
Yes.
I mean, we all know we don't have the money to go buy a Vista. We know we don't have, I mean, it's just like everything that we do. We know we don't have the money, but that doesn't stop us. We continue to work at it, and then we go to the people who do have the money and we ask them for it. And so far we've been pretty successful at that, and I don't see any reason why we would be any less successful, especially something like farmers markets. And right now, they're kind of a hot thing and a buzzword. And when you talk about funders, you talk about opportunity. They love, there are many who love rural America, and farmers markets are totally rural America.
So like value-added ag and farm-to-table and all of the, you know, responsible resourcing of local programs is like all of the things that everybody's talking about right now. So that's particularly why Avista is so interested in this venture, is that it is a very, very big soft spot in Paul Kimmel's heart. He runs the Palouse region. And so I've gone to several food and event expos with him as he shows me things that they've been a part of, Avista's been a part of over there, and see some of the networking that goes on within the community and some of the silliest things that fix problems between farmers and restaurateurs is the farmer said, well, I don't like it when the restaurant people come because they buy all my good produce at a bulk price because they're a bulk market guy, and then I don't have anything great left for my moms and dads and things like that to come through. And the guy at the restaurant's like, I'm making it into soup. I don't even care what it looks like. Why are you selling me the good stuff? But they never talk to each other. So there was this person in the middle that said, what if we did it this way? And those are the sorts of things that have happened as a result of farmers market associations and community gathering places and all of those pieces kind of working together within a community that become beneficial to multiple stakeholders in the process. So I think that those are things that we can look for here in Othello. A lot of our retail agricultural growers right now don't come to our farmers market. They go outside of our farmers market. So I think that some creative thinking is going to have to go around that. Do you pick an off-market day? Do you try to compete with the markets that are already established and existing? And those are where those vendor survey pieces, customer survey pieces, the one-on-one touches that we can have with people at the farmers markets and the associations that we go and visit, I think will yield a lot of information for that. So field trips all summer, guys.
Awesome.
It's going to be so fun.
I actually kind of did a small one this past weekend. I had to be in Richland, right there off of, like you're going to Cadillac Hospital.
George Washington Way.
George Washington Way,
they
thank you.
They closed down the city block off of Lee Road.
They got a little amphitheater there, and plenty of room. They had a bunch of little vendors in there Saturday, and there were some people. It was just the coolest thing.
Yes.
And it, like you said, it was packed with people.
And I think that's a great model, yeah.
It's, you know, you get a little amphitheater like that. You can do all different, you know, type of things and around it and stuff. And, you know, I thought something like that would be, you know, advantageous or cool.
And it's similar to a larger sized facility. You know, that is like a business district. It's a retail business strip. Those businesses that are around it are there all day, every day, and they benefit from the market. So they close down their roads And then the farmer's market sets up in the middle. So all of those restaurants, all of the boutiques and shops, all of the other things there benefit from the farmer's market and vice versa. And I think that that's the kind of model that you can apply, that sort of thinking, the acre tenants, the people that are there year round being, you know, supplemented by the farmer's market, and then the farmer's market being supported by those existing long-term businesses. Like, you know, maybe Smoke and Wood Barbecue becomes a restaurant. Maybe Yogurty Smogurty moves into the farmer's market building. Maybe Ironworks sets up a cafe in town and on Broadway, something like that. So people are constantly coming there for something, and then additionally introduce the seasonal or, you know, long-term seasonal market. So it's a really good example of something that's pretty small scale when it comes to the structures of things, but really well done.
Well, one of the things I was pleased to hear in your presentation is that the public outreach has shown that the public wants the full meal deal, and I think the public has wanted that in previous projects that the city of Othello has had, and that was kind of overlooked because we didn't have the money. And I'm of the opinion, I believe the mayor is of this opinion, that, you know, we've got to dream big, and you've got to go after those big dreams in order to obtain them, even if we make it partway. So I am glad to hear that is something that the public wants.
I actually, and I won't say very much more about this, but I think a lot of it has to do with Sean and not having money, but not caring and going after money all the time. I really think that some of that is a product of that. We did the two RCO grants, the one for the water park or for the splash pad and one for the ball fields. And it wasn't hard to get letters of support for either of those two things. It was usually, it's like pulling teeth to get people to do anything to take, and it wasn't. And it was just, this was sort of the same thing. It followed suit. It's almost like we've trained our citizens or seasoned them enough to think that they know if they contribute, if they give us what we ask for, we've had a pretty good track record when it comes to being able to deliver at least a portion or a step towards what they'd like to see in the long run. So I think that a lot of the success that we have already had is what continues to drive that positive momentum, because you can prioritize things a lot of different ways. And all three of the things that I work on, you know, the farmer's market, the splash pad, the ball fields, are all quality of life pieces. And we all know, as the large picture, that's as important as water and sewer and streets and housing and schools and all of those other things. If we leave one piece behind and we move forward with everything else, then we're not going to be successful. So it's important, I think, to prioritize things pretty equally as we're moving forward. So, and not to stop when things are positively moving forward.
Well, Amy, I want to personally thank you and Meg and Tom and the committee and Eric and Fadden and the others who put this together, because this is really first rate and we really appreciate all this effort. So thank you.
Thank you.
I think you got your answer. Okay, with that, we'll move to item 4.2, which is an update on city projects. We have a number of them going on, and with us tonight, we have our engineer, Sean O'Brien, and Sean's gonna give us that update.
Okay, so Mayor Council, we're kind of getting into full swing with city projects. We've had a pre-construction conference today, for the crack seal project, and that work will start up on Wednesday. So they'll be doing mostly streets in the southeastern quadrant of the town. Do not have the list of streets, what order they'll be going in, but they'll probably be about 2 weeks of solid crack sealing, and then there's another product that we use to fill wider cracks or even kind of little pothole areas that they'll come back and do in the third week. And so that project is about ready to get going. So just for your information, and you may notice it happening and have people asking you questions. There'll be a notice going out to all the homeowners a day or two before they do their street, telling them which day they're going to be on those streets. So hopefully the residents have a heads up when it's coming. Another project that I've got a little bit involved with is the Well 3R project. Last week they set the pump. A little over 800 feet down, everything's in, the discharge head's in, motor is on site. They did not come back today when they thought they were going to be setting the motor and getting everything set up so they can start doing the plumbing to the building. But everything is still on schedule. The hope is it will be able to pump June 1st, and no reason that that's not going to be obtainable. So we'll have that well to use through the summer, and the hope is to use it pretty hard and then keep track of all the water, the drawdowns, and the water levels through the summer, because that is a well that will be our pilot project for doing aquifer storage and recharge and recovery through the winter. And then next year we can pump it again and try to compare last summer to this summer and see if the recharging aquifer actually produces any results, and if it does, what those results are. We had a bid opening today for our well number 10 drilling project, and that's, I handed you out that little bid summary just for your information. We got three bids, and there was a couple other contractors that had told me last week they were going to bid, but we did not get bids from them. But the low bid was right in the ballpark where I was hoping it would be, and the other two bids were surprisingly high. But we got a contractor, I've talked with them, they're happy with their bid, so that will be coming to you guys next council meeting for award. And with that project, we'd award it at the May 28th meeting, which would have days starting up in about mid-June and to really July, and then we should have that well, should be drilled by the end of October is when days would run out, and we'll have the pump house project design started, so hopefully we can get right into building the pump house and get that at least foundation framed and stuff before winter hit would be the goal, so that they can do a lot of the indoor work through the winter and have that well being able to pump come next springtime. So Lee Road is a project that is probably the next, well, is the next one that's going to be going out to bid. Varela has been working on the design of that. We have 90% drawings submitted last week. I'm reviewing those currently. We'll get remarks back to Varela, and we're looking to go out to bid with that on the 23rd of this month, with a bid opening set for June 13th. And that would have days starting in early July and going through kind of that, I think, August. So I think they have 40 days for construction in that. So. Starting in July, going through August, and finishing up in September. They do have a detour. There's going to be a truck detour route to, because Lee Road will not be available for truck traffic. So, and then Reservoir 4 is the project that's been kind of put on the back burner, and I'll start putting time towards that and trying to get that project out so that we can get it constructed before winter sets in, and then that would be one that we'd probably be painting in the spring and hopefully having it up and ready to go come summertime for next year. On private side, Sagestone 8 phase 2 has submitted plans, and we've approved those, and we have pre-construction meeting for that on Wednesday, I believe the 15th. And so we'll know more about what their schedule is as far as that's going to extend 12th Avenue and wraps around into, I think it's called Sandstone. I'm trying to get all the sands and sages and stones in the proper order. But I believe that's Sandstone. It's about a 19-lot development.
Where's the sand?
Anything to do with you?
Where's the sand? Nope.
He has the sand. He has no stones and no sage. But I think I'm starting to get them all straight.
Hill.
So we'll know more about what their construction is, and then we still have to work with them as far as coming up with an irrigation design through that development and trying to work with them on that. We came to an agreement with an engineering tech last week, and his first day will be next Monday on the 20th, and so that'll start, hopefully I'll have some additional hands this stay on top of these projects, plus work on getting other projects and plan reviews and all the other things that are kind of Varela's scope, but I keep getting involved with and whatnot. And then we have a water sewer street committee meeting tomorrow at lunchtime to go over the latecomers fee and also answer any more questions on current projects that are going on. But that's kind of my summary. If there's anything else you have questions on, I can answer those at this time.
I have a question on these couple of these bid items. They only got a dollar for...
So it's probably mobilization 20, and...
No.
24-inch casing.
Okay. With well drilling, you have multiple different methods and ways that, you know, based on the contractor's equipment and the way they would drill the wells. So the way I have set it up, you have a mobilization for a bunch of different levels so that with well drilling, your quantities are often, you have a pretty good idea where you're going to hit basalt at. You have some rough ideas where you hope you hit water at, but with those, your quantities can vary quite a bit. So with the mobilizations, not every drilling method has every step. And so that's why with some of those, the mobilizations, if you look at them, they're all loaded up different because some will have the same piece of equipment. They don't need to mob in different equipment. Some do. One method of drilling, they will not leave a 24-inch casing in place. You can drill and you're drilling a 24-inch hole and putting a 24-inch casing as you go. That can't stay in there permanently because you need to have an annular space for the grout to get down around the casing and seal everything in. The people or the contractor that did the $1 for the 24-inch casing, their plan would be they would drill that 24-inch casing in with no extra hole. That'll go down to the basalts. Then they'll start drilling a 24-inch hole for a 20-inch casing, and when they put that 20-inch casing and start grouting, they'll actually pull the 24-inch casing out as the grout gets up there, and so you still have your 24-inch hole, but it'll just be a single string of 20-inch casing. So the bid's not weighed to a point where they're getting the best of us. It's the way it was bid out, it allows all the different methods to bid it. And the specs reflect that.
Seems like, you know, they're only paying a dollar, and then you got the other two bidding $50,000, $24,000.
Yes, and the way the specs are written, they'll still get paid for that 24-inch casing because they're installing it. But it's the drilling method costs a little bit more, but they have less of materials.
So it should be less than 24 grand then, right?
50.
50.
Well, when you look at their overall bottom line, they're within, you know, they're within $20,000 of the estimated engineering costs. So they've made it up in other places.
Yeah.
So I mean, they've got the mobilization cost was $15,000 in the estimate. And they've got $78,000. That's right in the middle. Well, it's the highest mobilization cost of the three bids. So they've made it up other places. They just know what they're doing. Yeah, they just know what they're doing when it comes to. Where are they from?
They're out of Sandy, Oregon. And this is one contractor I've never received a bid from, haven't worked with. On previous well jobs that I've worked on, but a couple of contractors have talked that they've bid against them in projects. The one contractor I talked to today said, oh, they've worked with them, bid against them in a project in Northern California. So I think they probably focus more in Oregon. And so it is, but looking at their equipment, they've got a website, they seem very professional, and they're currently working on a job in Hanford, so you would assume that there's basalt there too, so it shouldn't be any surprises on what they're drilling through.
Good.
Snyder didn't put a bid in?
Snyder did not. He had called me last week and he was asking how set we were on our schedule, and we want to try to have this well pumping next year. I mean, I think we want to get into production, and to do that, we've got to get it drilled this year. And so unless we were going to do an addendum just to throw more months in there so that it worked out for him, he just said, oh, I'm not sure, we'll still look at it. But then he did not turn a bid in. He said he's booked up through the fall, and I think we would have been looking at either starting in the wintertime or having to wait till springtime for him to fit into a schedule.
So. Good job.
Yeah. Thank you, Sean. Okay. Any other questions, Council? All right. Thanks, Sean. We'll move to our unfinished business tonight. Is there any unfinished business come before the Council? Yes. Our lawyer was scheduled to have a conference call with CBHA's lawyer over some of the provisions of the developer's agreement. We couldn't contact them today. They had scheduled a conference call at 11, but their lawyer was unavailable. So hopefully he'll be able to have that conversation tomorrow. And it sounds like we're going to get a lot closer in some of the hardline things that previously had been positions that have been taken are now starting to soften because they also have other development that they want to do. And so I think we're going to be able to, hopefully, and then when we have something here, we'll present it to the Council. But right now, we don't have anything to present to you.
People are using that road anyway.
They are.
Yeah, that gravel road. It's the natural place to come in and out of that parking lot. Mm-hmm. It really is. So.
Any new business? I just want to remind council members who are up for re-election, this is filing week. It started today. You have until Friday, I think. I don't know what time it is, so you better check that.
I think it's closing Friday.
Yeah. I will say that I finally was able to sign the Department of Health capital budget appropriation for almost $1.5 million just this morning. That's what all the red tape and all the different stuff we had to go through to finally get to that. But so now we have the one that we got 2 years ago, or a year ago, when we got the $1 million from Commerce and the $1.55 million from Department of Health for the Well 10 and for the water reservoirs. So those are now under contract. And we received some other appropriations, which we're going to start working to get those under contract as well. So, and with that, if there isn't any other business, I will adjourn tonight's meeting at 7:29 p.m.